in the book of Esther. So if you would turn there in the book of Esther, it's right before the book of Job, which is just before Psalms. Esther, and we're in chapter 2. And just to get the context, since I didn't teach last week, we'll go ahead and read the first several verses. After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. And let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan, the palace, to the house of the women, under the custody of Hegi, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them, and let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. So basically, after he had decreed that Vashti would no longer be queen, they recommended that a new queen be sought. They went through all the provinces, and they culled out what they considered to be the cream of the crop out of the young virgins. Again, these were ancient customs that were really wicked and ungodly, because a lot of this, I'm sure, was done against the wishes and the will of families and those girls. Verse 5, now in Shushan the palace there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. Keep his name in the back of your mind, because he's going to be one of the heroes in this account, in this story. Verse 6, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. So he was one of the captives. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther. Her Jewish name was Hadassah, and they also called her Esther, his uncle's daughter. So she was basically Mordecai's cousin. Okay? For she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. And I brought out last week, I thought that was very noble, the way that in times past, even in ancient cultures, families looked out for one another. She didn't have a mom or a dad. I don't know what had happened to them. And this was her cousin, Mordecai. And he took it upon himself to raise her, to take care of her, to watch over her. You know, I think our society would be a whole lot better off if families were more involved with one another. I mean, all throughout our families. We're missing that. I think it's one of the downfalls of making government your God, is they really want to abolish family and make government as the supreme benefactor. And it's a terrible mistake, and it's ruined the moral fabric of our nation. We need to get back to that. Verse 8, and this is where we're going to talk and look at today. So it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan the palace to the custody of Hegai, that Esther was brought unto the king's house to the custody of Hegai. I'm going to go with Hegai. Okay. All right, we'll go with that. Keeper of the women. So basically, this guy was assigned to watch over all these women in the harem, basically. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her things for purification with such things as belonged to her. And 7 maidens, which were meet to be given her, out of the king's house, and he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the women. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred. She had not revealed that she was a Jew. For Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. So in this passage, we find that Esther is favored by Hegai, the keeper of the women. Now, several young maidens were gathered from the provinces. They were brought to the king's house, and they were committed to the care of this man named Hegai, who was in charge of taking care of them. They called him the keeper of the women. Now, there's something that most people probably just gloss over. But I want you to see that when the king decreed that this be done, his will was executed. It was carried out just as he spoke it. And I think there's a lesson there. If a heathen king's decree can be speedily carried out, then certainly the king of all the earth has the power to execute his sovereign designs and purposes in the salvation of sinners. Now, the women could not resist this decree. They had to come. And I believe that's just the same, even more so. God's elect do not resist or frustrate His purpose in the effectual call. He has decreed before the world began that multitudes of people come to know Jesus Christ, and that the Spirit of God is going to bring them out of darkness into light, out of deadness into life, draw them with an invincible, effectual call. And that call, when it comes in power, is always, always able to prevail over that sinner's fallen will. See, I believe God has to literally conquer men's wills, because men won't seek after God. They're running away from God. They have no desire for God. They don't understand the things of God. So God has to fetch them. God has to draw them. And you know my favorite illustration of this is when Saul of Tarsus, later known as Paul, on the road to Damascus, remember what his will was. It was to kill Christians and imprison them. That's what his mindset was. Jesus Christ conquered that, changed it completely, and in just a moment of time, Paul said, "Lord, what wilt thou have me to do?" That's the power of God in changing men's minds and hearts and will. And I'm thankful for that, because I'm a partaker of that. I go back, it won't be long for my birthday's coming up, my spiritual birthday. I go back all the way to 1980, when I was lost in sin and in darkness, depravity, addiction, ungodliness, immorality. And you know what God did? He changed me completely. He drew me out of that. And it was a miracle of grace. Changed me forever. And I believe God does that to lots and lots of people. But it took the power of God to change my will, to change my heart. Well, if you believe in the theology of many in our day, people actually believe that the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, the one who has all power in heaven and earth, actually has less power than the earthly will of mere mortals. Because they teach and they preach that salvation's all up to you. It's all dependent upon whether or not you're willing to come to exercise of your so-called free will. And I've said for years, man has a will, but it's perverted. It's contrary to God. It goes against God. It always chooses that which is wrong. God has to change that for men to come. And I've always thought how seriously wrong it is to say that man can say to God, "No, my will is more powerful than your will," when it comes to salvation. Now, what would prevent that same man at the great white throne of judgment if he was able to resist God in the effectual call to salvation? Why not resist God at the judgment? Why not use the same power to say, "No, I refuse to be judged"? I mean, logically, if he had enough power to do it the first time, he should have enough power to resist the will of God in judgment. We say, "That's blasphemy, man. You know that's crazy. You know that God's more powerful than that." Ah, you're getting it. The light bulb's going off. Yes, he is. He can make men willing in the day of his power. You see, the call of God is invincible. And what folly it is for men to preach that mere mortals can resist the almighty power of God and thwart His eternal purpose by His supposed free will. Here's the true story. If man is just left up to his free will, he's going to always depart from God. See, I don't want my will to be paramount. I want God's will to be paramount. Daniel says this, "And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, 'What doest thou?'" Well, immediately, Hegai notices something remarkable about Esther that distinguished her from all her peers. This is so amazing to me. One little Jewish girl that has been taken out of 127 provinces. So there's women from all over the kingdom gathered. And here's this one little Jewish girl that set her apart. Maybe it was a glow from the glory of communion with God that made her countenance to shine like Moses. Whatever it was, this keeper of the women, Hegai, showed kindness to Esther and gave her the best place in the king's house of women. Ordered up 7 handmaids to see to it that all of her needs were met. And put her in the best place. This is God. That's the only way you can explain this. It's God working His will in a circumstance that had not even come to pass yet. All right? At this juncture, nobody knows about the conflict between Mordecai and Haman. The decree to kill all the Jews had not yet been signed. But notice what God is doing. He's preparing everything beforehand. He's lining things up to execute His will and ultimately preserve the Jewish race through this little Jewish girl. It's amazing to me when I see the providential hand of God. Now, even though Esther was exalted, she's taken out of some village somewhere, and here she is exalted to a place of prominence. And you know how people get, she could have acted like one of the Kardashians. She got all this, look at me. I'm going to start a new Snapchat or get on Twitter or something else. I'm gonna let everybody know how great I am. No, she was humble. She did not forget the guidance of Mordecai. When he told her, listen, don't let people know that you're a Jew. You're in a strange land. You don't know yet what's going to happen. So don't reveal that. So don't reveal your identity as a Jewish girl. Now, you say, well, that ain't right. Well, he did not instruct her to lie, but rather not to volunteer information about herself. Matthew Henry said this, All truths are not to be spoken at all times, though an untruth is not to be spoken at any time. Okay? So, she didn't spill her guts. I'm a Jew. She didn't tell that. What I love about the way this ends in verse 11 is the concern of Mordecai for his cousin, who really was his adopted daughter. It says, and Mordecai, verse 11, walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. He checked on her every day. He was concerned about her welfare. Even after our children leave the nest, we ought to always be concerned about their welfare and be concerned about them. We ought to check in on them, pray for them. And then as you get older, you're probably going to find that they're going to be checking in on you. This is the way the family dynamic has worked for millenniums. And I think it's a good thing. He wanted to know her behavior as well as her status in the king's house every day. And I think it proved that his love and concern for Esther was sincere. He wanted the best for his cousin, who for all practical purposes was his adopted daughter. He looked out for her. And certainly, parents, never cease praying for your children. Always desire the best for them, and the very best for them is to come to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior and to walk in His ways. That is, to me, that's worth far more than a college degree, boatloads of money, houses, lands, cars, popularity, prestige, political power. I would much rather my children come to know the Lord and walk in His ways and raise their family in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And it wouldn't matter to me if they took the lowest job there was to provide for their family, as long as they did it faithfully, honestly. I want my kids to prosper, and I want my grandkids. I want the best for them, and the best is not giving them everything, but training them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But we need to think about how we view things with these concerns. The spiritual should always come before everything else. Everything. Because that's what's most important. We'll pick up with verse 12 next week, God willing.